Mi fa sol te re mi qua, qua de wa ka le. All praise and due to the ancestors. Mi fa sol te re mi qua, mumba. All praise is due to the sun. Si fa sol te re mi qua, jua. All praise is due to the sun, sun. Mwanwa juwa. Si fa sol te re mi qua, wa ze wa ka. All praise is due to the ancestors. Libations to the ancestors. We honor and we appreciate you. We call on the ancestors who kneel at the feet of the divine creator of all. We invoke your energies to come, be with us as we do the work of liberating the African mind, rebuilding our communities, healing our hearts, and reclaiming our culture. To the Africans who taught us that we are not sinners, but divine beings having a human experience. We acknowledge those ancestors, known and unknown, who suffered the terroristic disaster of the Maafa, the dungeons of Africa, chattel slavery, Jim Crow torment and lynching. Our great elders, aunts, uncles that were taken away from us. Black people who were sacrificed and sacrificed their lives to teach us to read, write, and figure. Black people who invented the stove, the elevator, paper, helicopter, and so much more. There are so many that have done so much for their progeny. Let us call out their names as we pour libations. Thomas Sankara.
Ashe.
Amos Wilson.
Ashe.
Ashe.
Hatshepsut.
Ashe.
Marcus Garvey.
Ashe.
Queen Nzinga.
Ashe.
Carter G. Woodson.
Ashe.
Yara Asantewa.
Ashe.
Nelson Mandela.
Ashe.
Winnie Mandela.
Ashe.
Paul Robeson.
Ashe.
Ida B. Wells Bonnet.
Ashe.
James Weldon Johnson.
Ashe.
Fanny Lou Hamer.
Ashe.
Toussaint Louverture.
Ashe.
Rosa Parks.
Ashe.
Jomo Kenyatta.
Ashe.
Anna Julia Cooper.
Ashe.
Muhammad Ali.
Ashe.
Amy Euphemia Jax Garvey.
Ashe.
James Baldwin.
Ashe.
Claudia Jones.
Ashe.
Frederick Douglass.
Ashe.
Queen Lilio Kalani.
Ashe.
John Henry Clark.
Ashe.
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 History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
as far too many of you die. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love. Signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Welcome, everybody. We're looking for our own Mr. Horace Kraft.
You finished washing the dishes?
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Dr. Williams Rogers, Black
Just
Reality.
Just wash all the dishes that are there now. You'll be done.
Hello? Hello?
Go right ahead, Brother Horace.
We're on the Black Reality Think Tank, Dr. Williams Rogers. This is Brother Horace Kraft. How you guys doing?
We're good. Thank you, folks are here.
For our ancestry profile, I have a good friend of mine that passed quite some time ago, April 14, 2012, Brother Larry Reed Sr. I'm going to go into that, if that's okay. right. Larry Reed was born in Indianapolis, Indiana, to Odessa Avery. He later moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where he attended the 4th Street School, Palmer Elementary School, and he was a proud alumnus of Lincoln High School in 1957. Now, Larry served honorably in the United Air Force in Great Falls, Montana. Afterwards, he attended the University of Wisconsin, where he received a master's degree in social work in 1969. Larry was a four-year star on the men's basketball team, a fixture at UWM, records in the books with, that are still unbroken. He received a special honor on January 28, 2000, as he was inducted into UWM's Hall of Fame. Now, Larry was a great friend of our program and a great friend of mine, UW coach Rob Dieter said of Reed. Now, he was around a lot of practices and games, and he just helped us out in support and in so many ways. He was also a great player and a pioneer for basketball and African Americans in Wisconsin. Reed was also a member of the All-Decade team for the 1960s at the UWM, and his second in the school's all-time scoring list with 1,693 points. Now, he also tallied a school record of 1,529 rebounds in his career, making him the only player in school history to have a 15,000 points and 15,000 rebounds in his career. He later became the first Black assistant coach in Wisconsin when he was hired with UWM in 1967. He later became the first African-American assistant basketball coach hired at UW-Madison. Yeah. Larry was the second African-American to work as an NBA office administrator, serving as the head coach of the Milwaukee scout for the Milwaukee Bucks. Following his career in sports, he began a career in real estate and insurance with his wife, Sharon, and they established the Reed and Reed Realty. He later worked in the Milwaukee Public Schools Recreation Department and served on the board for New Horizons Center. As he excelled in athletics and business, he also managed during the same period to devote his life to family and faith. Larry gave his life to Christ and was baptized early at the age of 35 at Cherry Street School of Christ in Milwaukee on July 15, 1961. The second most important event occurred in Larry's life. He married his spiritual soulmate, Sharon Lee Britton, a remarkable union of love intertwined in faith that God produced a dynamic couple that was used to make the difference in lives of many people. Though the union of four children were born, Larry was an outstanding father who absolutely loved his children and also loved his extended family. As a founding member of the Hampton Church of Christ, Larry taught Bible classes for more than 40 years, and as his children expressed their childhood was created on going to church on Sunday mornings, beginning with Bible classes, church services, and a break home for the sports game of television and dinner, and back to church for Sunday evening service. In addition to his four biological children, Brother Larry, also members called him, was a father figure to the rest of the children of the church as well. Larry was just a dynamic person, a good friend of mine, and just wanted to pay tribute to him and say hello to his wife, Sharon. And she's still with us at this time. Thank you. And Larry was 72 years old when he passed. And that was April 7th, 2012. And that will conclude the ancestral profile.
Thank you, Brother Horace. Boy, that was very inspirational for us to hear about a local Milwaukee who has now joined our ancestors. And we're excited to hear are coming up your introduction of our guest.
Okay. All right. Well, we have Fatima Laster. She is an entrepreneur, mixed media visual artist, and operator of the Five Points Art Gallery Studios, a new mixed-used art space in the Five Point neighborhood of Northside of Milwaukee. Now, Five Points Art Gallery and Studios focuses on increased representation and a collection of local, national, international, contemporary, fine, and outsider artwork produced by artists of color. In addition to serving as the heart of exploration, collaboration, professionalism, development, and business expansion in the visual, culinary, and varying arts genies. Fatima.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Now, your gallery is open. It's in the Milwaukee area. What was the location of that again?
It's on the north side of Milwaukee. So the address is 3514 North Port Washington Avenue. It's at the intersection of Port Washington and Keith Avenue.
And what type of artwork, would we see as we go in there, and how does that work?
It's not by appointment. The gallery hours are Thursday through Sunday. From Thursday to Saturday, it's 12 to 5, and on Sundays, it's 12 to 4. Monday through Wednesday, the gallery is closed unless you make an appointment for a special visit. We've been very flexible during the pandemic to monitor the crowd sizes. So for people who are not comfortable coming in during the normal hours, we try to make some accommodations during our normal closed hours to accommodate visitors who want a more private and less crowded visit. I'm sorry. And then with the visit, you'll see a range and multitude of different art aesthetic, but the commonality between them is primarily artists of color. And so it's not just local artists, it's national, international artists as well. You'll see paintings, drawings, collages, sculptures, photography, 2D work, 3D work, abstract work, representational work, jewelry, some clothing, furniture. So you'll see a plethora of different art aesthetics by the artists that are in the space. And right now we have, within the gift shop alone, over 30 artists. And then we just celebrated our 2-year anniversary last night. And so within this 2 years, we've also exhibited over, and with the gift shop, we've exhibited close to 50 artists, local, national, and international.
Do you, what got you into the art?
Were
you inspired by some of the people that you have as guests or?
So my start is informal. I didn't go to art school or anything, but I did art with my sister as a child. So we were young and our mom and our parents would just give us art supplies to keep us occupied. So we liked the practice and the, of art. The concept of being a professional artist came to me later in life. It was something I kind of fell into, but I did start making art as a stress reliever out of duress when I did commercial banking. So I actually started making when I was living in Chicago and then moved back to Milwaukee to grow within that industry.
Now, correct me. I've done some things in art, but I didn't go in that direction. I've always was kind of told that was not a lucrative situation for many people. I mean, what motivated you to continue, or has that thought crossed your mind?
Well, again, I'm not formally trained, so all the stereotypes that came with being an artist and working as an artist came later to me. When I started the journey into this industry, some people started saying, you know, a good artist is a dead artist, or the wealthy artist is a dead artist. And I never heard of that before. And so I guess I told him, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to be the first living artist to make money off of my work. And so I guess without the preconceived notions and the negativity, it was easier to navigate. And just being an innately driven person and not easily swayed, and using perseverance to constantly develop, to network, and then expand the practice myself and figure out how to make it sustainable has been my journey.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, are there many Black artists that are in the Milwaukee area that you...
There's tons of Black artists in Milwaukee. And I guess that's one of the reasons for this space, is to showcase that range and foray of talent that's out there who are possibly getting overlooked and not introduced to some, I guess, more mainstream opportunities to actually make their careers more sustainable for themselves. But within the market too, and you said who's shown here, we have Della Wells, we have Sanju Hung, Amar Insaroma has a solo show right now that deals with the Black Madonna, Brad Anthony Bernard, Munir Bahayuddin, Martina Patterson, the list goes on. So those are just the local ones, and that's not even all of Portia Cobb. I am an artist myself. Some of my work is in here. Daryl M. Payne. He's trying to make me Kirsten Ghaznavi. Manny Todd. So Sheila Miller. Pamela Graham. And again, these are just the local ones.
So what is helping sustain that gallery? I mean, is business that good, or is there outside money, grant money? What's going on?
So it's a mixture of things. I am currently set up as a for-profit, so I don't automatically get grants, because a lot of the grants go to 501c3s or nonprofit entities. I have had some financial assistance, but the space itself is arranged as a mixed-use space. So there are art work studios in the space as well, a culinary arts kitchen, and an artist residency space. And so the rent from those help support and sustain that, as well as a lot of collaborative efforts to keep it going, in addition to some art sales. We also do events, so space rentals also help support and sustain the operation.
Is there a big influence with yourself and what you do with the MPS? Is there are they in the schools? Are they visiting your galleries or the universities?
I've had some visits, but the pandemic shut down a lot of traction.
Okay.
Access, like I even had a college from Kalamazoo, Michigan that had set up a tour visit, and that just cut that off completely. So a lot of the immediate tours and access have been cut off for now until further notice. But we did have some school visits. I'm up the street from the MLK school, and so they visited towards the end of last year to see an Orisha exhibition. And they come back annually. They were scheduled to come back annually. Mm-hmm. There have been different other schools, like University School has reached out to me. Some of the more immediate MPS schools, not yet, but we're gaining, I guess, traction and visibility. I'm across the street from a Hope Christian School, so having conversations about how to introduce and integrate a arts program into their school, because they don't have it a part of their curriculum.
So I'm looking at how you operate with this pandemic. I know this is very difficult. So I'm sure you had a lot of are there some days where you're not open, but there's you have scheduled events where people come in specifically just to do the work, where they're, you know, just learning the skill set?
So again, we had started doing workshops. We're in our second year of operation. So we had started doing workshops at the end of last year and going into the beginning of this year, and the pandemic cut those short. They were physical, on-site workshops. And so we just, with the pandemic, had to figure out how to sustain, regain attention, regain access. Some of the ideas we had for workshops, it was just better to do them in person. And so we're trying to figure out how to cater and sustain attention while online, when some of the work is very tactile, and some of the artists' practices, they're usually more hands-on. So.
Well, I know I would like to, once things pick up, is there another way? Are you guys doing anything via Zoom?
So what we do utilize Zoom with, every time there's an exhibition open, and we do have live artist talks. And so if people are still not comfortable coming to the space physically, and we are physically open right now, we circulate a Zoom link so that the viewers can tap in, hear and converse with the artists and maybe the audience members to have a discussion about the exhibition and the work. Earlier in the year, this was in April, the pandemic kind of hit the artist community very hard. A lot of contracts got cut short, and just being tied to the home place kind of did a number on some of them mentally and physically. So we set up some artist chat so that the artists could reconnect with the community, some people who support them, buyers, and try to help them connect back to the world, and actually have, I guess, just like a therapy session to reduce the isolation that some of them were feeling, and okay, make them present with the community. So we had a number of those scheduled throughout April. And those were recorded, so they're online too.
Okay, well, I thank you. And I will probably open up the line a little later for some questions, if you can stay around for that, because I'm sure we're going to get some callers that's going to want to ask about some of the things that you're doing and how to get in touch, and especially after this pandemic, that's going to pretty much help a lot of people and stuff like that. Like you said, there's some therapy involved with art, and you don't necessarily have to be this skilled person. I mean, you just bring what you bring, you know.
Right.
So I appreciate that. Again, people, we are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank, Dr. William Rogers. And this is the Sankofa Council of Elders in Milwaukee, where they are bringing us with their knowledge and education and experience in just so many different areas, just how to navigate and move through this pandemic of racism and all the things that we're going through from past and present. We thank you. Would now like to talk to Baba Courtney and his wife, Tina Courtney?
Yes, we're here.
Oh, okay. Hi. I'm going to I'm missing I'm sorry, I can't get to your bio. I can't get to it with my setup here, so I'm sorry if I can just, we're going to talk about creativity And I know that you being of the Osoa set and your roles, if you could just explain Nkumba, one of the days of Kwanzaa in that regard.
Okay.
And I would. So that is, and I will ask the keynote, Courtney.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry. Yeah. If I could, if you could just share some of your experience and some of the things that you've done. I know it's quite a bit, but. And then we can go into living with your creativity.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Sakia Courtney. I currently live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I'm very happy to have been asked to talk about something that's really near and dear to me, that is Kaumba and Kwanzaa. Little information, you know, about me. I'm a retired educator. I consider myself to be a cultural and spiritual activist. I'm also the vegan chef owner of Vegan Soul here in Milwaukee. I love the garden. I'm an herbal apprentice, and I also still do a little bit of educational consultant. I am a part of Osoa Set Society, where I've been almost, you know, 30 years. As far as my work is concerned, you know, I've won a lot of different local and national awards for a lot of the work that I've done, especially around school choice here locally as well as nationally. We've been married for 42 years. We have an extended blended family of 15, and no, I didn't give birth to all of them. And
I know Baba Courtney has been pretty busy, so not that busy though. Okay.
Yeah, not with me. Anyway, we have 52 grandchildren, and
wow.
more than 20 great grandchildren. So we got our own village, tribe. That's for sure. You know,
nice.
There's a lot more that I can say, but what I'd like to do is probably just focus on the issue that you want me to talk about, and that is one of Kwanzaa.
Okay.
We have celebrated Kwanzaa in our family for over 45 years. And it started out when I would probably say more in my revolutionary period of my life. And
okay.
At that time, I didn't want to deal with anything that was, you know, connected to Western culture. And so I really went against the commercialism as it was associated with Christmas. At the time, I didn't know anything about Kwanzaa, but I just knew that I didn't want to be caught up in what I perceived to be, you know, capitalism and exploitation and commercialism of a holiday. So I didn't do anything for the first year. My parents, you know, were shocked. I had an older sister in particular who just couldn't understand, and she said, "How could you do this to your children after you had so many wonderful Christmases yourself?" Well, anyway, the next year I discovered the holiday Kwanzaa. And from the point I learned about Kwanzaa, and I was living in Chicago at that time where I was born and raised, I decided that I wanted to make Kwanzaa as important to my children as people made the more dominant holiday important to theirs. All right. And that did not mean, you know, going overboard with the commercial aspect of it, but it was really digging deep into the cultural, you know, aspect of it and understanding and helping them to understand that the principles of Kwanzaa was not something you celebrated just once a year. It was something that should be incorporated in every day of your life. So since I had started... Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
You know, that's an interesting that you brought that up, because I know my brother, when he had a different attitude about Christmas, and he started celebrating Kwanzaa and so forth. And, you know, I kind of had the same attitude because I came up understanding Christmas with Santa Claus and, you know, the Western ways, European way of thinking and so forth. So that was a little alien and a little tough for me to stomach.
That's how it was for my family too. But, and, you know, interestingly enough, in the few years after I initially started celebrating Kwanzaa, my family became very much a part of it. My extended family became very much, or I should say my birth family became very much a part of it, to the point that they actually attended, you know, Kwanzaa celebrations. We would have really huge Kwanzaa celebrations here, like at North Division High School. We had over 2,500 people. And my parents actually came up, you know, for that and others. So things started to change. And so what I looked upon as weird, you know, in the very beginning, that they became very much a part of that.
Wow. Well, you know what? I think that we're going to take just a break just to pay tribute to our sponsors. I will allow Dr. Jane to go ahead and just announce some of our sponsors for the Black Reality Think Tank.
Thank you, Brother Horace. And our sponsor is edocadvice.com, and that's edocadvice.com. It's a website that's been created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that makes sense to you. We do not replace your health professionals or provide your care, but we can help you to become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. We network with other health professionals throughout the country to help bring the information that you're looking for. So go to www.edocadvice.com.
Thank you, Dr. Jane. Queen Mother Sakini? Courtney?
Sakia, I'm here.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, you can go ahead. We got that from Dr. James, and we appreciated that.
Yeah, that's knowledge. For sure. I was writing it down as she was talking, too. Okay. So, you know, as I was saying, that, you know, we started out, you know, just celebrating Kwanzaa in our family. Then we found other families of like mind, and we would get together. Then we decided that, you know, we wanted to expose more people to it. So anybody that would let us have their space, for free, of course, we would have, you know, family Kwanzaa community celebrations. And it quickly grew from just a few families to, I think the largest one we had at Urban Day was either 400 or 700 people. And wow. That's when we knew we needed to move. And so
now you were doing that in some libraries and other places where they had you do these ceremonies?
We did it at the Bell Phillips Y. We did it at we probably did it at the King Library. Did it wherever there was open space. In fact, what is now Coffee Make You Black, they had a little space in the back. When it was Inner City Development Project, we did it there. Mm-hmm. You know, so anywhere, St. Boniface Church, wherever it was that people opened their doors, you know, to us, we would host these celebrations. And we would do it for 7 days, you know, and again, obviously younger, but we would do it for 7 days. And again, my goal was to make sure that my children grew up knowing that this celebration was something that not just us were doing, but there were millions of people all over the world that were also celebrating.
Well, how would you say that influenced your life and maybe some of the lives of some of the people that you introduced Kwanzaa to? And Kumba in regards to the meaning of it, and and how they should continue to celebrate, where this isn't just a monthly thing. This is just a daily thing. This is how we live.
Right. Well, Kuumba is the sixth principle of Kwanzaa, and it means to always do as much as we can in any way that we can in order to leave our community more beneficial than we inherited it. And, you know, people would generally, you know, look at that in a few different ways. First of all, people would say that, you know, once black people move into a neighborhood, the neighborhood would go down. Well, that's not true. The decline of a neighborhood has absolutely nothing to do with the race of the people that live in the neighborhood. It's totally connected to the economics of that community. So if you have poor white people move into a neighborhood, that neighborhood is going to go down. Also, too, with Kuumba, when we look at creativity, and it was interesting that you had the young lady that has the 5-point art gallery on first,
yes,
is that one of the ways that we do express ourselves, our creativity, is through art. And that art comes to us in many forms. And if we just think about what life would be like without art, you know, it would not be very much of a life at all. But that art also translates into those things that we're passionate about. You know, those things that we're passionate about that we turn into an art. And I would say that I've done that, you know, with my food, you know, the business that I'm in now.
Yes, you have.
Yes.
Yes, you have. I can attest to that, definitely.
Right. And that's my expression, you know, of creativity. And that has actually, and that has translated to two of my children that are now chefs living in Charlotte, North Carolina, and actually doing well, you know, for themselves in terms of making their living off of their creativity of cooking. And what I found is that the expressions of creativity have come in many ways. Just looking throughout my own family, I have one that's into finances and credit repair. You know, I have another one that you will see, you know, in a performance art. You know, somebody else is into photography. But again, that art comes out of a passion, and it's the creativity, that genius that exists within all of us, that is what is talked about, you know, when we look at the principle of Kuumba. So again, that's not something that we just got to celebrate once a year. It's something that we should acknowledge in every day of our life and encourage it, especially amongst our young people.
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, when I think about the creativity and it's just so in so many forms. And I think I mentioned it to your husband, Baba Courtney, in regards to shackled hands.
Right. That's a martial arts form that was created by Talona.
Okay.
From D.C. Talona out of Chicago. And I've saw that form practiced. And he would use it in terms of, because of the enslavement of our African people with the shackles on their hands, he dealt with developing a fighting form using that same premise, you know, without the shackles on, but had the palms and stuff right close together, the wrists. And his moves in terms of moving was all emanated from that whole shackle hands theory.
Well, you know, Baba Courtney, I kind of jumped into this right away, but if you could just give a brief bio on yourself. I know you've done so many things within the community and your history is great. And I just, if you could just share some of that.
Well, I was born in Chicago. I went to school in Iowa, and then I came to Wisconsin in 1968. It was my first teaching assignment, and I'd like to say that when I went to college, the movement in 1964, they had recruited black students all over the country based on the civil rights marches of 1963, and the I Have a Dream, and then also based on the Birmingham bombing. And so when I went off to college, well, I went to as many young black students at that time at 18, we wind up being recruited to white colleges, and very few black students on at the time. It was almost like it was experimental. So when I went to college, the movement of black people was civil rights from 1964 to 66. So I knew what prejudice was, and I had a chance to experience some of it. But by the time I got out of college, the Black Power movement had kicked in 66. And I graduated in 68. And by the time I got out of college, I knew what racism was, which was a whole football game. A lot of people understand discrimination and prejudice, but they don't understand racism. Once I began to understand racism, then it especially of the teachings of Malcolm X, and at that time, Black Power, Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, that came out. There was a number of different authors and the music. Everything began to change. And so I saw it as my mission. A lot of times we don't know what our missions are in our lives, but then the circumstances, the environment, and the people that you come across will give you an awakening of what it is that you're supposed to do. So from that, what I've been doing for the last 50 plus years is basically mentoring men of all ages, starting from teenagers all the way up now to men in their 50s and 60s, to try to give them some insight in terms of how we can work together and how we do work together, because a lot of people don't think that black men work together. Don't necessarily think in this society that we have insight into our situation in a society that we don't run. And I've always pushed that if you don't want to run your own world, then nothing in your life ever makes sense, because you'll always be going to someone to ask them to give you something. And that's usually what our community has done. But there's always been those who decided on self-determination from the time we were here.
Well, I thank you for allowing me to be in that space and to be mentoring me as well, because I sure appreciate a lot of the history that you have given me and shared with me. So I thank you again. And so,
Christina? I'm excited to hear our guest, because creativity is probably something that many of us have not really thought so much about during this entire year of pandemic. And I'm very delighted to have this opportunity to hear from those who have lived by creativity. And I hope you could share with us, all of you, how you feel that creativity and stimulating those talents in us that may serve to help us survive this very turbulent time that we're going through.
Well, you know, again, as I was saying, is that if we take the time to look for and acknowledge those things that we are passionate about, you know, and I say especially with our young people, and that's one of the things that the pandemic has done for all of us, is made us stop, you know, and assess, you know, our lives, assess what it is that's going on around us, give the earth a chance to rest, you know, and just really, you know, just taking a deeper look as to what our lives truly mean. You know, people are now, you know, sitting down and having dinner together, which, you know, in my generation, there was no question about whether or not you were going to have dinner or have time to have dinner together, because that's just what you did. You know, now people, you know, nowadays, or the old norm, I should say, people would have to make time and schedule time for that. Now, in the new norm, they had no choice, because they were there and they were learning each other and they were interacting with each other. And so during this time of the pandemic, if we took the time to go ahead and identify the gifts, the talents and the skills that each of us have, what we have also the opportunity to do is to go ahead and help them develop, you know, those skills and put them to use for the benefit of the whole. Whether or not they, you know, they turn that into a business, which, you know, I can say in my own personal family, that people who followed their passion were able to turn that into businesses, doing things that they didn't even know that they were able to do and survive even in the midst of this pandemic. You know, so again, when we talk about, you know, creativity is really, really just all around us. It's a matter of us opening our eyes and appreciating what it is that we see and utilizing the talents and the skills that, that each of us, you know, have within us.
Well, I can say that this, as you say, has been a time that has allowed us to do some thinking. And I've been a physician for more than 41 years now, and all of my reading, my listening, my thinking has pertained to science and medicine. But it has been in this year that I began to revive an interest that I guess I'd suppressed for so many years, and it has related to architecture and design. Mm. And so I've become a lot more involved in my reading related to making things look nice in my personal surroundings, advising other people who are doing, looking at their living circumstance. But this is a way of expression that I hadn't realized was of interest to me, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Right, right. And, you know, Dr. James, you could even expand on that more by looking at feng shui. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, yes, somewhat.
Okay.
Not fully, but I'm studying it.
Okay, yes. That's what I thought about when you talked about architecture and in particular, you know, helping other people. Because and feng shui, for people that don't know, is just simply the art of placement. But people don't realize that where they have things placed in their homes and in their rooms can make a difference in the energy, you know, that is generated there. And just by moving some things around, you know, you can find that the air gets lighter or, you know, there's more positive vibes that come in. So you now having time to follow your passion of architecture, incorporating feng shui in it, would be a monumental help to lie to people who really just don't know. They don't know why the air around them is stagnant or why they can't seem to get, you know, things done.
That certainly is a point. I'm trying to do that from a perspective of health, and I'm glad you mentioned that as a modality to do that. I've been looking at ways to help senior citizens be able to live in a setting that is safe for them, and sometimes doing some renovation or changing some things in their space that makes it safe for them to continue to live independently. And so it has incorporated looking at the lighting and looking at colors in ways that I hadn't really thought about before. But we're so grateful.
Hello, Dr. James. Dr. James, can all of the hosts and just stay with us. We're going to go to a break, and we will have callers call in and answer questions after the break. How's that sound?
All right.
Okay. We'll be back with Black Reality Think Tank after this break. Thank you.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
What was that about?
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Well, we're back. And,
all right.
Hour, and I wanted to take this opportunity, Brother Kraft, to mention what our lineup is for the Black Reality Think Tank, the Time for Awakening. And so our programming begins on Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. We have the African Perspectives. The host for that show is Brother Oshi. Also on Mondays from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., we have Acres of Diamonds. The host is Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that is programming that all is taking place at Eastern Standard Time. We have from 8 to 9 p.m., also Eastern Standard Time, we have the Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Miwaya Kimbone and Sister Nataki Kimbone. From 9 to 10 p.m., Conversations of Reparations are on the first and third Mondays. Moving on to Tuesdays, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with our own Dr. William Rogers as the host. That's Eastern Standard Time. And then Wednesdays, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives, host Brother Oshi. On Thursdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Melanin Live, host Chief Lance Jones, Eastern Time, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday. Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot. Saturdays, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk. Host is Sister LaWanda Chambers. 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Elders of Sankofa. That's Eastern Time. And then Sundays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. As you can see, we've got a busy week, and we look forward to all of these programs, and you're joining us. So, Brother Horace, let's continue on with some more conversation with our guests on creativity.
Okay. Sister Sakini and Baba Courtney?
Yes.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good. All right.
Good. We were last talking about movements and so forth in regards to creativity and stuff like that. You know, with your move here to
teaching here, well, both of you are teaching here in Milwaukee for quite some time, and your experiences, and what have you seen how it's affected Milwaukeeans here and under these current conditions and stuff like that, and, you know, how do we move and try to make things better through, you know, our African perspective?
Well, I spent a number of years teaching middle school and high school when I decided to go back into teaching. And what I found is that the educational system, for the most part, is incorrect, because what it tries to do is to put things into the youth rather than bring out of them what's already there. And wow. Then the other part of it is to show them, in terms of what they learn, how it can help their family and community. A large part of the teaching that I saw in the past was people trying to get education so they could get away from the community. They didn't, right. We were not programmed to see our community as a community that should be built up. It was projected to us that ours was a community that we should escape from. So when I went off to college, a lot of the people that was there, they got the degrees, they decided that they were not going to come back to the community. That was the mission of the people who at the time sent us there, our elders, grandparents, was to go get this education, come back and help the Black community. But what a lot of Black people did, they went and got the education, got a re-indoctrination of other communities, and their attempt was to escape the community. So that's a different way. So when I looked at the community, because of my indoctrination from my family, was that one to come back and help. And so my area of expertise, or sometimes you might just say it's like a mission, was to work with young men and help them to develop. But what
hey, Baba Courtney, we're going to take a caller. We got somebody that's waiting to so we're going to take this caller from area code 414-334-334. Caller, are you there?
Yes, good evening. Habari Ghani.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for coming in.
All right. Very good. All right. You know, with the brother who is, I think it's Brother Courtney, who's working with men from all ages, I'm very curious to know, how do you establish, especially amongst us as Black men, a level of trust that would take us together to from point A to point B? What are your techniques or your protocol that's established in order for us to establish having that level of trust for us to move forward with each other?
Well, I think the first thing that we have to do is to eliminate what I call unification rhetoric. And what I mean by this is oftentimes we see the conditions that exist in our community. We know we all want to do something about it. But what happens is oftentimes we say things that on the surface may sound as it's that it's supposed to inspire us, but it may very well be dividing us. For example, we see out here the conditions that's going on, and we say things like, Black men need to step to the plate.
Okay.
And what makes us assume, first of all, that Black men don't want to step to the plate? Basically, in this society, we have defined our manhood based on our ability to provide economics. So what happens when there's the brother that can't provide the economics to his family? We come up with things like, hey, man, you should have went to school. You should have you should take care of your family. Well, a lot of times what happens is that if you're not provided with the opportunity or the wages you make are so low, you may not be able to take care of that family, even though that's your intent. So when we say things like that, and usually we define our manhood in this society on our ability to be able to provide the economics like we see other men do, but we recognize also, we have to recognize that in the capitalistic society, somebody got to be on the bottom because that's the way it's designed. So in most cases, black men wind up on the bottom. You should never define your manhood by a dollar, because there's days you will have them and there's days that you won't. There's a lot of people are finding out now with economic depression and COVID. Okay? You don't print the money. You can't outmoney the man who print the money. So you have to be careful. You have to be careful about your language when you are saying, even though it may not be addressed to anybody personally, and people do that, but when we say black men need to step to the plate, and in a lot of cases, people are determined that by money. So when they see you not being able to step to the plate in your family, how does that make a man, black man, look in front of his women and children?
Okay.
So what happens is this: when the language, even though it was not the intent, when you make a man, a black man, look bad in front of his women and children, you can't talk to him about unity in the next breath, because he ain't gonna never want to hear nothing you gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
You done made him look bad in front of the people that he loved, and he don't want to come up short. But a lot of times, the circumstance and the way the game is played in this society, we know it how it used to be. First high, first fired, and you can't step up. And that puts exceeding amount of pressure on him. And so that what happens, he's not going to trust the next brother based on how he's that brother's functioning.
Okay.
That's one thing.
Okay. And just one other quick question.
Let our guests know, who are in our listening audience, that if you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make, if you would please give us a call at 215-490-9832.
Okay, that's the first thing I wanted to say. There's a second thing. In terms of, once again, it comes down to how we look at the world as black men and black women. When I used to teach high school, I knew that I had to capture the imagination of young men and young women within the school, okay? And what I would do is I would relate their ancestral legacy to them. And what I would usually open up in my classroom when I would come in, I would say, look, I introduce myself, I give my rules, I say, and if you don't do my work, you're not going to pass my class. But first of all, what I want to do is let you know that I am not talking to you. I am talking to the ancestors who live inside of you. And now we know that also not only do we carry genetic characteristic traits by people who preceded us, we also carry genetic memory. So we look at the world different from other people because we're the oldest people. And so you have to awaken the ancestors that live in our youth and even adults so we can see the world the way it's supposed to be. There are certain things, if you compare our societies in terms of the modern day world, is quite different. We didn't have any locks on our doors in the village, which meant we trusted each other. Today, we don't trust each other. We all of us lock our doors. There's no trust. So when you lock people out of your house, you lock them out of your heart as well. We didn't have any locks, so we didn't have any jails. But today, as black people, we disproportionately occupy the nation's prisons. Even though we emanated from society that didn't have any jails, we didn't have any mental institutions. We didn't have any battered women's shelters. We didn't have any homeless or senior citizens' homes. The seniors live right there in the village till they died. We had less than a 3% divorce rate. Now it's 70%. And one of the things that a lot of people talk about are young men and feeling that they're lost. No, they just have to be reprogrammed. That's how we had rites of passages within our society, because when they got to a certain age, they had to be taken away, and there were certain men that would take them away to train them in the ways of how they should begin to function in the society that we as black men and black women ran to make sure that the society stayed in the cooperative and something that was beneficial to all.
And just one other quick question. I know that Kwanzaa was brought about, and I know that Malana Karinga created this at or around the time of December 26th through January 1. I'm just curious, you know, the Nguzu Sabo principles, there are seven in number. Had anyone ever thought about saying dedicating a month to each one of those principles as opposed to just simply 7 days? Maybe with taking each month with each principle, that would almost, I would say, galvanize a little bit more of work towards knowing, excuse me, knowing what Kwanzaa is all about in total. So just the curious to know, to take those Nguzu Sabo principles and split them up into months, if that would work.
That has actually happened in a number of times in a number of places around the world. When I was in education, we actually had developed a curriculum highlighting each of the principles every month. And the whole purpose of that was, just like you said, so that we could keep the Kwanzaa principles alive and people would know that this is something that they should act upon each and every day. There's also been organizations that have been created around, you know, certain principles, whether or not it's NIA or Kaumba, you know, or whatever. So what it is that you're saying has happened in lots of different places. And one of the organizations I can think of off the top of my head that I know that does that is a Black mentoring group out of Charlotte, North Carolina, called the Males Place. Okay. They are very conscious of the principles of Kwanzaa and incorporate it, the principles of Kwanzaa, in everything that they do. And it's just an outstanding, you know, program. But yes, those principles are designed to be used every day. They just acknowledge during and highlight it and celebrate it December 26th through January 1st. But when you look at those principles, those should be something that we incorporate into our daily lives.
Asante Sana.
Pardon me?
Asante Sana, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Asante Sana.
You said that was made out of a males in North Carolina? What was the name of the program again?
It's a Black mentoring group. Okay, and it's called the Males Place, M-A-L-E-S.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and it's organized by a brother by the name of Reggie Singleton, and it's powerful.
The other thing I was saying was that when Dr. Malana Karinga developed the Kwanzaa in 1966, we've had him to come here and be our keynote speaker. My wife, as she would develop the Kwanzaa programs that we did all over the city of Milwaukee, I think he came to the museum, when we had Milwaukee Public Museum, we had Kwanzaa. And I think it was over a period of how many days?
I remember. I think he also came to UWM.
Yeah, but I'm talking about when we hosted, we had something like 8,000 people over through that period of time. And then also, we hosted him at our home during this period of time. We also had hosted Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, through that period of time, because my wife was formerly a member of All African People's Revolutionary Party when I met her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
I'd also like to say one other thing, Horace, is just give people some insight why we got this platform in terms of creativity, is we create in so many different arenas that we don't even know. Because basically the people who did all the work is usually the ones that's going to come up with the creations. So our ancestors, you know, when you go and look at the Book of Inventions, then you're going to see all kinds of things that we didn't get patents for or we didn't make the money off of. But what happens, everything is not about money, because a lot of the things that we use has brought us together. What if we didn't have this internet during this time of a pandemic. I didn't have these cell phones. And if you look up and look at the history of the PC computer, you will see that a lot of our people was part of the creation of these tools that we didn't even make a lot of the money on, but it is proved very good for our community to be able to stay in touch, to create, you know, to pull our families back together, you know. So I'm like I said, there's a lot of ways that we look at the world that was quite different, and all we have to do now is basically use these two tools to reprogram how we look at the world. You know, we've looked at the world through somebody else's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Brother Harris?
Yes.
Can I say something?
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge my cousin and his wife, who taught me everything I know about the holiday Kwanzaa and the Nguzo Saba, but I took it from there and just did the Nguzo Saba. Thanks, y'all. Y'all know who this is. The Kuja China Mansion. But I just want to say about Kuumba, when we look at how Dr. Karinga put that together, we really need to think about the four R's, and that's restore and renew. And it came from ancient Kemet. One of the queens was saying how she was looking at restoring and renewing that which had come to ruins. And so we certainly see a similar situation today. The other R is revitalization, to revitalize our community and make it better than it was before. And we see an example of that with the Tulsa, Oklahoma situation, where they burned down the city, and brothers and sisters rebuilt it better than it had been before. They burned it down again. But you know, that's how folks be tripping. And renewal, constant renewal. If we think of it in terms of those four R's and reaffirming who we are, then we don't have to look for a certain group of teachings or holiday to come, because we embrace that in our inner spirit, that everything that we do and everything that we face is going to be about the renewal of our community, the restoration of our community. So if we're a teacher, we take that in our classroom and say, hey, how do we do this? How do we make sure that we are restoring in any job that we do? My background has been nursing. And I definitely thank my cousin and his wife for helping me with these principles, because I took that to work with me. And it really helped with the children that I dealt with. When I became a teacher, same thing. And so whether you're a teacher, a doctor, a chemist, a professor at the university, if you think in terms of how do I contribute in this profession and this creative piece that I have, how do I contribute to Kuumba, the great creation of restoring and renewing my community to a greater level than how I found it when I came on this earth. I love y'all.
Mama, right, Nene, y'all. Before you go, could you repeat the four R's again?
Okay. That is restore and renew that which is in ruins, revitalization, and reaffirming.
Okay, reaffirming.
And so if we engulf that inside of our very being, you know, people say, well, can I do my prayers? Well, that might be something you want to thank the Creator for, those four R's being a very much a part of your living and breathing.
All right. Thank you, Mama Yeye.
You're welcome.
All right. Hey, we have a caller from Detroit, Mr. Moreland.
want to make a comment, or are you just listening? Caller from Detroit. Okay, I guess he must have left. Wow, that's very interesting. Restore, renew, revitalize, and what was the other R?
Reaffirm.
Reaffirm. Reaffirm. Wow. That's powerful.
So, Brother Horace, so also, too, when we talk about, you know, creativity, the principle of Kumba, just want to bring to your attention that right now we're in the middle of, almost in the middle of a cycle, a lunar cycle called Heta Root. Each of the cycles are tied to different kinetic energy. And this particular one that we're in now is with Heta Root that governs creativity. And so as we talk about creativity and how it manifests itself in each of our lives, this is really an opportune time where the energies are highest for us to be able to visualize and see ourselves achieving, you know, those goals of success that we all have. The energies are there waiting for you, you know, to go ahead and take advantage of it, you know, right? And so what you want to do is be able to visualize, you know, your goals and see yourself being joyful and achieving, you know, those goals. That's where you find the success at. And that, too, you know, is part of that Kuumba creativity.
You know, I think the walls of racism that we deal with on such a daily basis just distorts our vision and in our hearts and in our minds, where they can't visualize, you know, their goals. You know, they're more or less in a depressed state. So we really got to work on waking people up to being more positive.
Yeah, and we have to be examples of that. You know, because there are many, you know, there are many things that you can look at and as you said, you know, be depressed about. And many of our people are, you know, but our people also need inspiration. Okay.
Yes,
that inspiration, you know, comes through the channel, you know, of joyfulness. And so we have to find and exploit those opportunities to bring joy, you know, to our people and let them know that, you know, all is not lost. You know, there's so many things.
Let me take another caller. Hold on a second. Let me take another caller. I got a caller, 414 area code 699. 414-699. Hello? Caller, go ahead.
Okay. Hotep to everybody online.
Hey, how you
thank
doing?
Hotep. Thank you. Hotepu. Thank you for taking the call. And I actually would like to comment on both of the speakers. And I'll be as quick as possible. We learned the Angusa Salva a long time ago with the Osarset Society here in Milwaukee, meeting out of the place you had on Fond du Lac with Queen Mother and Baba Metahochi and Taki and all of you all. So first of all, thank you for the presentation. And I do want to say to Baba Courtney, I remember the very first lesson you taught us at the Y. You had a young group of children and you asked us to choose between three cakes and you put the cakes in front of us and you asked us to choose. And people were saying, and I think it was strawberry and I can't remember the other two flavors, but people were picking one and then you taught us a lesson. You said, I didn't say choose one. I asked you to choose. And so with that, and as we think about the Ngusa Sava and all the principles and all that we've been taught, and how even some of the things that society uses that come from our own culture, and they use it back in our own faith. I know the previous caller was just talking about the R's. Those are the same things that you taught us when we were young that they turned around and they're using in the government. And we don't even know our own culture, but I do want to thank you for that. And as an example of that, I wanted to point to the Five Points Art Gallery that you were speaking about earlier, where Fatima, the young lady. She
actually in Alaska.
A former funeral home, and converted it to an art gallery. And not only that, the gallery, and it's out there where it's helping people to show them how to work their communities, how to take from what is, what we think is trash, abandoned. We don't want to live there anymore because the grass looks greener on the other side, which points to another lesson that we were taught from the Courtneys and that whole group through the Osara Set Society about we have our acres of diamonds. We just don't realize we have them. So one of the things that we noticed from Ms. Laster with her gallery is that the community within itself is feeling a lot of support. It isn't just for, hey, I'm here for myself. I'm here for everyone. And just uniting people and using that art as a form of healing, as a form of music presentation. So all of the different Kuumba traits that you've talked about are actually demonstrated within that gallery. And to the Courtneys and to the Osara Set Society, we have not forgotten those lessons, and we still try to get our young women at 13 to the aunties so they can have the influence, and the young men the exact way you taught us. So Asante Sana for the lessons, and Asante Sana to Ms. Laster for what she has done in terms of taking those principles of Kwanzaa and showing all seven of those principles. Cooperative economics by having, I think she said, 30 artists there. 30 yes. artists. So Nia, she has a purpose. I believe she's talking about some goals she has for 5 to 10 years. And she, every one of the principles. So Asante Sana, and I appreciate that you allowed me to speak.
All right, thank you. We have another caller at area code 414-507. Caller, are you listening or would you like to add on?
I would like to add.
Go ahead, call it. Brother LaRue.
Brother Courtney, you was killing it on your analysis of the situation. I like what you said when you say you speak to the ancestors and the youth. And that's what we got to do, because we are connected to God through our ancestors. We could not be here without them. If that connection had been broken at any time, we could not be here. I like your logic, sir. I've always appreciated you. And I think, though, we have to look at another thing. One of the things you alluded to sum it up, is the situation that we're in right now is related to our education. Our education has made this necessary. And so I just want to ask you, in your opinion, are things getting better? Or are things getting worse?
I think things are getting better. And the reason that I say that is that a lot of our youth reject a system that they see that is not beneficial to the people who live into it, especially our people. So they rebel, in which they what they should. I mean, you're not going to allow for yourself to be continuously indoctrinated into something that you know that ain't right. And we living in a society now that has showed that they can't fix not one problem. I mean, educationally, legally, medicine, I don't care what arena you name, they can't fix one problem. We have basically always been the people who fix the society. And we're still doing it now, all right? And so especially in terms of our youth, and I think I know who this is. I know the boy.
Yeah, Brother LaRue.
Right. And Brother LaRue wrote the book, we're not calling our ancestors slaves. Right.
Thank you.
We don't call our ancestors slaves. And that's quite accurate. We were enslaved. But we never accepted its slavery, and every generation, every group that has ever been here There are people within that group that have fought against our enslavement. And our youth, they may take a different way of doing it, but it simply means being non-capitulatory or trying to fit into the existing system that you know that ain't right.
Thank you, right. Hey,
well, thank you, brother.
Let me add this. Because our minds operate on a certain logic, and one of those and that basic logic is, I want to say, from nothing, nothing comes. But if there's no food in your refrigerator, you cannot get any food out of your refrigerator. And so, when we are taught that our ancestors accepted slavery without much of a fight, then that throws a thing on our self-esteem. And that's, and Brother Courtney, you alluded to it, why we don't trust each other. Because right now, because of the education system, the way it's teaching us about us, it's bringing our self-esteem level down to the point where it is hard for us to trust each other. So I think it's important what you're saying is that about us educating us. And I think you're doing a good job, sir. You saying all the right things.
All right. Thank you, Brother LaRue. We're going to take another call. 414 is the area code, and 554 is the number. 554, are you listening, or would you like to make a comment? Caller? 414-554, would you like to make a comment, or are you just listening? Okay, Baba Courtney, you can expound upon on that question from Brother LaRue.
Okay, I'd like to say, too, just want to add in is that, you know, a lot of times as we get older, we begin to recognize how much we really don't know because it's reflected in what's taking place in our homes, in our community. You know, we used to think that if we got to a certain age or a certain status that, you know, you didn't really need to know everything else, and you were just going to be the teaching that everybody should listen to you. And, you know, and what we have found is that all of those things are in a constant state of change. You know, it took me 44 years to recognize the spiritual aspect of my being. I knew how to do certain things physically, and I knew how to do certain things mentally, but I absolutely knew nothing about the spirit, and I'm not talking necessarily about religion. But as my wife has said, we're part of All CSF Society, and when we came to All CSF Society, under the tutelage here in Milwaukee of Erwat Masebe Kesik, our Queen Mother, and we've been involved for 30 years, and also our international head, Shechem Hashechem, who you've had on your show before, who brought back the teachings of our ancient ancestors, it opened our eyes to a different way of looking at the world. And so
thank you for that information. Let's take this other caller, Baba Courtney.
Go ahead.
414-364 is the caller. Are you listening, or would you like to make a comment? That's 414-364, caller. Listening, or would you like to make a comment? Okay, I guess you just. Hello? Okay, I guess go ahead. We may have lost that caller. Go ahead, Baba Courtney. This is again.
So, one of the things that I learned, and it took me till I was 44 years on my journey to understand the power of the spirit. Is we look at the triangle that says, and you see it at the YMCAs all the time, body, mind, spirit. Well, most of us try to do things. We kind of know what we want to do and why we want to do them, but we don't recognize, because we've not been taught the spiritual side of it, that we don't determine when it happens. We may have a 5-year plan that takes 20 years. We may have a 20-year plan that takes 1 year, because the spirit determines if we're on track with what is we supposed to do as part of our destiny, the Spirit will bring people in our life or resources in our life that we didn't know where they were going to come from. So if we each of us look at our lives, we've seen that we've had any number of people who have come in our lives to take us to the next level. You know, it's not just like a straight line. We make these plans. We go get out of college and we go make all this money. We go into the corporate world. And, you know, we've heard all this before. And a lot of us wind up, people have gone in the corporate world and hate it. The stress on them, killing them. You know, we're responding with all kinds of addictions, from eating to drugs to smoking to alcohol, to beat off the stress of being someplace where we don't want to be, because we don't see a lot of the work that we're doing in any of these arenas that's really fixing anything in this society. Nobody wants to go to a place every day where they working and ain't nothing, if things getting worse, you know. So the spirit is very important, and that's one of the things that all of us have to learn. And when you made the statement, Horace, about the depression that exists, we have to use every tool when we talk about creativity. You know, that's why a lot of people, you know, the creativity in terms of music, there's certain music that came in certain times when I was a teenager in my early years, when a lot of the message music came to lift us up. You know, I'm black and I'm proud. James Brown turned around a whole lot of black children with just that one song.
Yeah.
You know, we had all kind of things that were taking place. Well, I just want to add one thing, and if anybody can come on in. I look at these young men out here. The young men in any community should be the protectors of that community. That's why America sends young men to wars. Right? Because you get to a certain age, you ain't going to no war. You get 25, they don't even try to recruit you no more when they were recruiting. Because the young men have a certain level of warrior in them, which they did in African societies to protect whatever it is that was built. Mama Yeye mentioned about Tulsa. Tulsa was an outstanding community, but they couldn't maintain it because they couldn't protect it. And white people went again with it and tore it up. All right. Any number of other places. But I just wanted to share with a lot of people, they may not have. When I was teaching school, I used to do assemblies. And I used to do these, and I came up with a creative way to reach a lot of the young brothers, because I would ask this question in an assembly where there was 500 students, young men, young women. And I knew that when I was on the stage and they introduced me, I had 60 seconds to capture the imagination of the young men. And if I didn't do that, they was going to get out on me and they was going to show disrespect, okay? So what I had to do is I would go in, once they introduced me, I would start off my presentation, and I invite anybody to use this. When you're dealing with the young men, I said, there was a time when black men, we ran our own world with our women. And we ran it well, and we ran it long. And if you study your history and culture, that's what you will see. Because why? We live the truth. And I say today, the truth still lives in us. And should we live our truth, we can once again restore our community to its rightful position. So the key was, I asked the young man, I say, okay, the question I have for asking you, I say, because today your women who are sitting here next to you are going to see the truth in you. How many of you believe in sex before marriage? And if I had 250 young men there, how many of them probably raised their hand?
250.
250. That's what most people say. I say, okay. Mm-hmm. I say, sisters, did you see that? Now let's find out what the truth is. All right, brothers, when you become men, get married, have daughters, and your daughters become teenagers, how many of you will believe in sex before marriage for your teenage daughter? Raise your hand. Yeah. How many hands did I get then?
Different story. None.
None, because not my baby girl. I say, right. Sisters, did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Many of you brothers come from, have teenage sisters at home, blood sisters. How many of you believe in sex before marriage for your teenage sister? Raise your hand. How many hands?
Right.
Hardly no hands, but one brother yelled out one day, well, they go do it anyway. I say, well, I didn't ask you what they go do. I asked you what you believe. I say, if right. you study your history and culture, you find out in traditional African societies, when our young women turned 15, 16, their menstrual cycle started. God designated they could now have children, so they got married because we lived in a civilized society that promoted and maintained marriages.
I'll tell you that.
Final
question. Hey, Brother Lulu, hold on a second. Let me just make an announcement here real quick.
Go ahead.
For anyone wanting to listen to tonight's conversation, it will be available, the Black Reality Think Tank, on Facebook. By tomorrow, you would have to go on www.timeforawakening.com. That is www.timeforawakening.com. That's for tonight's conversation that will be available on Facebook, on the Black Reality Think Tank. All right, go ahead, Brother Courtney.
And so then the last question I pose, I say, many of you brothers come from single-parent households, but even if you didn't, let's say your mom and dad was married, she became a widow through his death, or they got divorced. I say, how many of your brothers want a man to approach your mama to get some? And we're talking about sex. So how many hands do we have then?
Right. Zero.
No hands. I ain't had a hand in 25 mm-hmm. years since I've been doing
right.
this, because mama is not a woman. She
right.
is only a woman to other men, not to her sons. So the
mm-hmm.
point was, is that when we talked about what was already in them, I pointed out to the sisters, they told
yeah.
us that they believed in sex before marriage. But when it came to their daughter, their sister, and their mama, I didn't see the hands. So what's
right.
the truth? They didn't have to read it in a book. It was already in their ancestral DNA and determined how they look at the world. Except
that
now we live in an uncultivated, uncultured society that we're operating out of someone else's frameworks, which will never
mm.
work for us.
Exactly.
Wow.
Hey, Brother Courtney, and for us, it was like sex constituted the marriage. And then we would have a marriage ceremony. But so sometimes sex can come before the ceremony. But for us, traditionally, sex was the marriage ceremony. When you got, when you had sex with somebody, you married them. And
That's
then
right.
you might have a ceremony later or before. But we shouldn't confuse the ceremony with the process of getting married.
I think we have some callers, so all the lines are open. So callers, come on if you have any comments or questions, or just listening. Go ahead, Baba.
What I was doing, and that was only one aspect, but there was, if you look at any number of different things of how we saw the how we live differently. Where were the police stations in the village? We didn't have any.
Right.
The elders dispensed the law. The men made sure that things was carried out appropriately.
Right.
All right. No man made pollution. How did we get our food? We grew, hunted, and shared our food. Now how do we get it? Buy, beg, steal,
right.
some grow, and a few hunt. So,
yeah.
And then the other thing was, is this. Now, this is one of the things that I've seen especially. In the village, since we didn't have any money at the time, is that we shared our God-given talents because we all had something that was creative. This brother's family and other families might have been the medicine people. Mm-hmm. So they knew about the herbs and what it was to take care of us when we were sick or whatever meditations or rituals or whatever we needed to be able to do to get ourselves healthy. There was other people that were the musicians. So that when my daughter got married or my son or a baby coming to the world, the music, we celebrated everything as Black people so that the music had to be right, didn't it? I mean, if you've ever gone to a party and you had a DJ that didn't know how to do the music right, it killed the party. There were men and women that was designated to work with the young people, bringing them into their manhood and womanhood. We had people who grew the food. You know, it's like I've read somewhere where corn used to be in a very small size, baby corn, and then the women doctored the corn where it became full size. A lot of these, what we call creativity, is God given gifts that we shared with each other. That's why there are certain things that we did not need, because why? We probably operated more off of recognition of being able to people who handle the thing that was in the best interest, and all of us had a God-given gift.
Yeah. Well, you know, I appreciate what you were saying in regard to the food and medicine, and in this time of this COVID-19, I had the pleasure of making some deliveries, some medicine that was prepared by Queen Mother Shakini Shabaka, and delivering it to some of our elders and others. And I know that everybody that did take the medicine, and just these are the remedies, these natural foods that your wife was talking about and so forth, that has made these people are better now.
That's right.
Oh.
A lot of these are old-time memories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when I was a young man, my great-grandmother used to get stuff like, I can't think of goose grease, and then we always had the Vicks on hand.
Right.
And, you know, all kinds of things to go get certain herbs that I've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now probably everybody's family, if they got any age, has done that. And even now with this COVID, you know, like you say, Queen Mother has delivered and had you deliver remedies that been out forever. And a lot of times it's forgotten because we didn't get into what we call the traditional, not traditional medicine, but the medicine that we use now basically as drugs.
Right, right. You know, and that addiction and then the cost and so forth. I mean, it makes it difficult for people to get the simple things that they need to make them better.
Brother Horace, let me just reach out to our guests that we'd like them to know that sponsors are welcome. Sponsors are welcomed for our programming. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App, $Nirvana, INS. And through PayPal.
Well, thank you very much. We will definitely be reaching out.
Hey, excuse me. I know time is getting short, but we need to hear more of Brother Courtney, man. I love what you're saying, sir.
This is a tag team event. We got Queen is with him as well.
Exactly.
No, that's okay. That's okay. We have different areas of expertise, so we work together on everything.
Yes, I know. I'm just pointing that out. Sorry. Go ahead, Brother Courtney. I just want to thank you for when we went out to Sherman Park and trying to engage with the people in the community, trying to do the manhood training. And so I thank you for all that support. I also want to thank some of the other brothers that came out there, Alfonso Walker and Brother Alfonso, Quay Coon, Derek Rogers, DI Fitness, I know I might be missing a few people, but I just thank you guys. You guys know what I'm talking about when we went out to Sherman Park to reach out to people. And numbers were low, but we did meet some people and make some contact and share some things with them. And Baba Courtney did some readings for several people, so that was a good thing.
Yeah, well, one of the things I'd
and,
also
oh,
like
I'm sorry, Brother Courtney, Zakiya, are you still here?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. If you could just go into about your food. I mean, I know it's helped so many people and stuff like that, and I know you're doing so well, but just eating healthy and stuff and the benefits from that, and especially during this time of COVID.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yes, during this, especially during this time of COVID, one of the things that's really important is that we keep a strong immune system, And that means that we need to be doing everything that we can to fight off, you know, this virus, because it's just all around us. And so there's several things that we can do, you know, to help ourselves. And
that
one
why
of
you preference vegan?
Pardon me?
And is that why you preference vegan?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Because if you look at a lot of the illnesses or the flus that have come about, you know, throughout time, they always had them associated with an animal, the swine flu,
okay,
the bird flu, the, you know, just all these things. And so we know oftentimes where things are, you know, have started at. And so what we need to do is to look at the foods that we incorporate into our diet. And I know one of the hardest things for people to give up, for those who have not done it yet, is that is to give up the meat. But if you look at the fact that what it is that you're eating is actually killing you and killing your defense system, then that might, you know, make you take another look at it. And so in terms of being vegan, yes, we consume no meat, no meat byproducts, no eggs, no dairy, no cheese, you know, none of those things. And yes, we still do live and live very well. And so one of the things that I had mastered, because at the time when we changed our diet, you know, we had 6 children at home. And when we made the announcement to them that we were no longer going to consume meat in the house, I knew I had to make, just like I did with Kwanzaa, make Kwanzaa more as important as other people did with their dominant holiday. I had to make my food look as good, taste better than, you know, those things that other people were consuming. And so that's
what I definitely did
done.
That.
Huh? Thank you.
I said, you definitely did that.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's what I've done. And it has evolved into a business that I had not planned on. But in my retirement years, it's doing, you know, really, really well. And I enjoy it. And so we have a day of mourning for the Native Americans coming up this Thursday, a holiday known as Thanksgiving. And in our family, we actually changed the meaning of that day because we knew it was an opportunity for us to come together as a family, and that's something that you always want to take advantage of. And so what we did was we changed the name and the definition of what's commonly known as Thanksgiving to Ancestors Day. And so when we come together as a family, we take the time to honor our ancestors in our family who have preceded, you know, many of the young people that are there. They never got a chance to know their grandmother or their great-grandfather or great-great-grandmother or grandfather. And so what we do when we come together as a family is that we tell stories, you know, about those people. We show artifacts, you know, from those people. And, yes, we do gather around the table for food, with food, and we have everything on our table except the turkey and the cheese and the dairy.
All right. Well, Sister Zakiya, I just want to thank you and Baba Courtney and Sister Fatina and all the callers. But we're coming to a close. Again, if you want to look at this show, you can see Black Reality Think Tank on Facebook at www.timeforawakening.com. And I thank again all you callers, and it was a wonderful show, and I certainly enjoyed the engagement. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you, Brother Horace.
Yes. Thank you, Brother Clayton.
Wait. Thank you.